All right, go, Gox.
Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. This is the second week of Capril, and we watched my pick, Ben Foster, because that's who's in charge of this movie. Ben Foster's Hell or High Water.
Ben Foster married to what's her name from That 70s Show, the redhead who's now blonde, Laura Pepperone or something.
Oh, no kidding. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, also shout out to Ali G. Him and what's her name got divorced. So,
TJ,
make red. Your move.
Oh, man. Elsa Fisher. Oof. Maroon.
But yeah, we watched Hell or High Water, a movie by, I didn't even bother to see who the director was and what else they've ever made.
I looked it up and I already forgot, and I had never seen any of their other films.
It's also a movie that I don't understand what time it happens in, because the movie was made in 2016.
It's like current time. I mean,
no one has a cell phone.
Yeah, but the you see graffiti about like the Iraq War, like in the very like.
Well, no, I know, but I mean, like, is it happening like 2001? Is it happening 2010? Like, is it happening?
I mean,
some of those trucks and SUVs are fairly modern.
I would say like
all of it was like late model stuff, it seemed like it was all like older things. All I'm saying is cell phones would have solved a lot of their problems, and they're talking about how they were switching over from VHS to digital recording for the one bank. Well, Texas thing.
Well, I think it's also a poor small town thing. I think
that the cops did have a cell phone, but they had like a flip phone.
Anyway, we watched Hell or High Water, we'll get into it. David McKenzie has made a bunch of movies, but this is the only one of his films I've ever seen.
Yeah, I didn't recognize any of the director's movies. The guy who wrote it is Taylor Sheridan.
The actor?
No, that's his name's not Taylor.
Oh.
So no, it's a completely different person.
Who am I thinking of?
Ty Sheridan. Taylor Sheridan wrote Tulsa King, which is awesome.
Oh, no shit. That's a connection to the show.
He also writes all those Yellowstone shows.
Oh. Mm.
Which I can't imagine I would like, but I feel like I've seen the whole series on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely something I feel like I've watched, even though I've never watched any of it.
He also wrote Sicario.
Oh, no shit. Wow.
Yeah.
Nice resume there. Sicario feels, this definitely feels a lot like Sicario in a lot of ways. I can see that, like, right away. Especially
when he gets out of the sawed-off Bronco with his, like, AK-47.
Yeah.
That shit was bad.
Yeah. All right, let's get into what we watched this week before we get into Hell or High Water. I'm very excited to talk about this movie. I think I'm really interested to see what we think about it, because I think I have a general idea, but it's one of those movies where I feel like I could be surprised. So what did you all watch this week?
I watched five things.
Oh my lord!
Almost six. I'm almost through a sixth thing, but we couldn't quite finish it in time. First is Sisters.
Amy Poehler,
Tina Fey, vehicle. That movie's fun. It's a lot of fun. And it's got tons and tons of like guest appearances in it. Like basically every comedian from their like little group of friends is in it. But that movie's a blast. And John Cena's in that movie, and I think that's the first movie role I ever saw him in. And he plays a drug dealer who at some point ends up hooking up with Tina Fey, and he wants her to like chain him up or handcuff him up, and he's like, "My safe word is don't stop." But that movie's a blast. It's really fun. I enjoy it quite a bit. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Where did you watch this film?
I don't know. Online.
One of them. Nice. One of the places.
Yep. Nice. The nice thing about Roku is you could just search, and it searches all the
aggregates for you. Yeah.
I've watched this movie a few times, and it's a really good movie. Fighting with My Family.
Oh, yeah, like we watched it on the show. Yeah,
that's a nice, easy movie to watch, and you don't need to really, after watching it a couple of times, you don't need to, like, fully pay attention. You get all the beats, but it's still enjoyable. Florence Pugh's really good in it. The guy who plays her brother is good in it.
Yeah, that guy's great.
Basically, everybody's good at it. Stephen Merchant, Nick Frost, Lena Headey, Vince Vaughn, The Rock. Yeah, that movie's fun. And poor Paige. Poor Paige. She's had a rough go of it physically.
Is she out of AEW again?
I honestly have no idea, but I don't know that. Was she wrestling there again? I can't
keep track. She was wrestling. Part of
the management or something. I thought
she was wrestling for a little. She was wrestling a little bit.
So maybe she's better again. I don't know.
Yeah.
But AEW also, like, they seem like they are just falling apart.
Yeah, they got a tough road to hoe now that WWE seems to has gotten their shit together. So
yeah, like Vince getting shit canned was the worst thing to happen to AEW.
Oh, without a doubt.
Because now it seems like people are like, oh, I'll go back now because Vince isn't there.
Yeah, and the show's actually good. Like, the show is actually, like, I don't know. The reason that we all flocked to AEW is because we were so sick of WWE, and now it's like, oh, wait, it's good again. So, yeah. And
for a couple of years, like, AEW was killing it, but now it's...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like, their big thing this week, apparently, is Tony Khan's going to release...
Oh, the backstage... The
video of the incident between Punk and Jack Perry. And Jack Perry seems, based on all the interviews and shit I read, he seems like the fucking worst. Although I don't like CM Punk either. He seems like the worst. But they both seem just insufferable. Like, why would anybody want to be near them?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like, let them both fight because they both seem like insufferable dickheads. Like, I don't care about either one of them.
Well, maybe Tony Khan will hire Vince.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That'd be something. Flip it around, then all the old WWE marks would have to go watch AEW now. Everything could flip all the way around.
That'd be hilarious.
I saw something today. It said Vince McMahon sold $310 million worth of TKO shares. I'm like, imagine having $310 million in stock in anything. Right. You'd be able to sell it and be like, meh.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, goddamn it.
Must be nice.
Fucking creep show.
That's the thing. It's just like when Dan Snyder sold the Commanders or whatever. It's just like, yeah, karma doesn't exist, right? Like, he's fine. Like, he made like a couple of billion dollars.
It's an almost incomprehensible amount of money.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah, karma doesn't exist. Like, you can just literally be like the worst person in the world and you will just get rewarded over and over and over again. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you believe otherwise, you are naive. Like, I'm sorry.
Next, I watched The Three Amigos.
Oh, love it. Hell yeah.
That movie slaps.
Some people's literacy is some people's El Guapo.
Wow, that movie's so good. He's opening presents. Ah, it's a sweater.
Hey.
In Mexico. That movie's a fucking blast. Everybody's so good in that.
Yeah, that's a classic, all time
classic. Before everybody realized Chevy Chase is a fucking prick.
Yeah,
he was still charming, lovable Chevy Chase back then.
But getting to see Steve Martin and Martin Short together just anytime is just, especially after. Well, you turned me on to Only Murders in the Building, but that just reignited my love of the two of them, especially playing off each other.
Yeah, they're so good. They got such good chemistry.
And makes me want to rewatch Father of the Bride.
That movie came out in, what, like 84, 85, probably?
Yeah, mid-80s, mid to early 80s.
40 years worth of chemistry going, 40-plus years. When you take in all the SNL and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Tremendous. Watched American Fiction.
Oh, how was that?
Which is excellent. Jeffrey Wright is so good. That movie is tremendous. For those who don't know the plot, Jeffrey Wright's Jeffrey Wright is a writer, and he's a very good writer, but his books are just not successful because they're like too good. They're too highbrow, and most people don't read them. So he gets mad when he sees a contemporary of his, played by Issa Rae. I have to look it up. I think it's Issa Rae. She writes a book, and they're interviewing her about it. And she's talking about like black culture and how we need books like this, and this is what resonates with the people. And then she starts reading an excerpt of it, and it is like, basically, it's like The Wire, like the language, and like it's almost like to him incomprehensible. So he gets drunk and gets pissed off that she's super successful writing this type of book that he thinks is nonsense. And he writes his own version of something like that. And he sends it to his publisher as a joke. And the publisher sends it in, and immediately he's given like $1 million book deal for it. And it just goes from there. So he adopts like an alternate personality because he doesn't want this book associated with him. But he doesn't want to give up the money either. So he adopts this like alternate personality, and he says he's a fugitive from the law, so he won't meet anybody in public and will only talk over like phone. It's so goddamn good. He's great in it. He's great in it. Sterling K. Brown plays his brother, and he is so good. Sterling K. Brown's like,
yeah, love Sterling K. Brown.
He's like one of the one of the best actors out there. He's so goddamn good.
Yeah, he's really good.
Tracy Ellis Ross is in it for a little bit. Erica Alexander plays his love interest. She was Max on Living Single.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and she's really good.
You know, in a 90s kind of world, I'm glad I always got my girls. You know,
there's this really great scene where he first starts like plotting this book out with all like the street language and stuff that he's not super familiar with because he's very educated and very like, I guess he would consider like highbrow.
Sure.
So there's a scene where he's writing and he's at the desk, but in the room is like, you can see visually they're showing what he's writing. And it's almost like a play in front of him, and it's Keith David, and I don't know who the other guy is, but they're talking back and forth about some crime and some bullshit, double crossing each other. And it's really good because he's like, as he's like saying like what Keith David says, then he's like, no, no, that's not right. But Keith David's saying it, he's like, no, that can't be right. It's really good. Like, I really loved the movie a lot. It's got a lot of heart and stuff to it. Too. It's really, I don't know how well it did. I feel like it was in and out of theaters.
It showed up real late last year.
But
it was critically, it did very well. I mean, it was nominated for a Best Picture. So.
Oh, good. It's a Prime original. It's an Amazon original, so it's on Prime to watch. But I recommend it. I think you guys will both love it.
Like, yeah, I definitely would.
Would it have cracked into your top five if you had watched it late last year?
You know, I would have to look at my list to see what actually made it. I can't even remember what was in my top five already from last year, and I deleted that list. So, possibly.
Oh.
Possibly. I definitely loved it a lot, and like I would rewatch it again. The last thing I fully watched was The Nice Guys, and that movie fucking rocks.
Oh, hell yeah. You've seen that before, though, right? Or no?
Yeah, I saw it at some point before. That movie's tremendous.
Yeah, it's so good.
Baby Goose is so good. Russell Crowe is so good. Like, everybody's really good at it. Russell, the kid who is the girl from These Spider-Man. Final Hours and Spider-Man. Yeah. Everybody's really good in that movie.
Don't say whores and stuff.
Yeah.
Say whores.
Kate Basinger's good in it for the little bit that she's in it. I didn't notice until I was reading some like the backstory, the porn producer that gets murdered is Robert Downey Jr.
Oh shit, I didn't know that.
They just like he showed up for a day, they threw some makeup on, filmed him as a corpse against a tree, and
oh shit. That was now I gotta rewatch it, see if I can notice it with him.
I didn't notice it even when I watched it. I saw it afterwards. Yeah. I was like, that does kind of look like him now that I think about it.
That's pretty funny.
Sid Scaly or whatever his name was.
Sid Scaly, what a great day.
But yeah, that movie's fucking awesome. Shane Black is great.
Yeah, Shane Black rocks.
Yeah, that's everything I fully watched. So we started watching Leap of Faith a little bit earlier, but didn't get time to finish it. But so far, it's a lot more
engaging.
A lot more engaging than I thought. Steve Martin, it's from like 92. He's like he's playing the big tent preacher. Religious, yep.
Oh, yeah.
Religious preacher. Liam Neeson is his foil in it as an American sheriff. And his accent is laughable.
Oh, I can't imagine what that sounds
so
like.
So bad.
Hello, guys. What are y'all doing? Like,
yeah. It's like, yeah, he's like a sheriff in like Topeka, Kansas. But the movie is surprisingly a lot better and a lot more engaging than I expected. I vaguely remember it coming out. I don't think I've ever seen it. But
is it like him? Is the poster like him in like a rhinestone like jacket?
I don't know. I don't see that. I haven't seen the poster. But so far it's actually pretty good. I expected it to kind of be trash, but I feel like Steve Martin made a bunch of movies around that time that were all just kind of garbage.
Yeah,
Father of the Bride movies aside, like the early '90s to mid '90s, he just had some a run of bad stuff. Like they were just putting him in everything.
Yeah, it wasn't good until like Bowfinger.
Oh yeah, Bowfinger. Love that movie.
Bowfinger's the shit.
Welcome aboard, Sean.
Shout out to Bowfinger.
But like, I was thinking, we're talking about originally for that movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it. Originally in that Steve Martin role, Michael Keaton was supposed to play like the preacher. And he ended up dropping out because of money. And Stacy was like, I could see Michael Keaton as the preacher, but I could not see Steve Martin as Batman. I was like, no, probably not. But I could see Steve Martin as almost like a Riddler, maybe.
Yeah, I could see that.
Not the Joker. He's not, I don't think he could pull that off unless it was going for like the Joker from the 69 or the 60s show, just kind of goofy.
Sid Caesar's Joker.
Why do you look like
fun,
Cesar
though?
Romero?
Because you don't know
what Cesar Chavez looks like.
A good joke. Anything else, Alec?
No, that's everything. Sean.
Oh, I watched documentary limited series on Netflix called Flint Town about the Flint cops, and I can't believe they allowed them to make this fucking documentary because they all look like shit because they're cops and it's bad. Oh, the documentary's good, but cops are bad.
ACAB. It's on Netflix.
Watched. Yeah. Oh, I also watched a documentary about 4chan, but like, none of us would get anything out of it.
I mean, because, I probably would. I love that shit.
No, but I mean, you already know all that shit.
Oh,
like, it's very,
yeah,
like, cursory, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know anything about it.
You need to get
really?
Deep. You need to get deep into the weeds.
I mean, I'm aware of what it is, but I'm not, like...
And then they brought out... They
steeped
drug
with
out that
lore.
Gross wheelchair midget that started 8chan and got into cute stuff. But it's not very good. It's all
Is it the QAnon documentary, or is it just about...
No, it's about 4chan and how Q spun out of that. Like everything else has spun out of 4chan.
Oh, I watched some.
What's
of that.
It called?
It's on
it's called
HBO.
Anti-Social Network. No. Oh, that's the Q documentary. That's about 8chan. Yeah. We're talking about 4chan, which spun out of 2chan.
Too many chans.
Yep.
That is true.
That's all I watched.
All right, Sean, pass the mic, please.
Oh, I didn't know if I was last. Gox.
I watched one and one half things. I need to revisit. I'm halfway through The Abyss. I love that movie. But I completely forgot how the setup of that movie, like how it starts.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's also supposed to have a wildly different ending.
I think it's really good. It's what's his name? Titanic James Steve.
Cameron.
There he is. It's Ed Harris. It's solid, and it's the beginning of it is horrific. Like what happens in the very beginning of the movie is like, I don't think I'm claustrophobic, but I might be a little claustrophobic because the beginning of the movie is about a sub that gets basically the sub gets fucked up, and now you need this deep sea team to go like get the nukes that were now resting on the bottom of the floor, and then the rest of the movie happens after that, in the pursuit of getting those. But like the scenes where the sub is like rupturing and failing and people are like trying to like seal off hatches and it's just like, I can't imagine much worse ways to die.
Well, apparently the water that they shot that in was like freezing and your girl almost drowned in that scene.
The one that's not Mary Steenburgen that we figured out.
Yeah.
That
was, Mastrione.
The one that Alec got, Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to finish watching The Abyss, but then I watched, and I hadn't watched this in a long time, and I was talking about this in the chat, I watched True Romance, and
love that
like,
movie.
You can tell it's Quentin Tarantino's I Work in a Movie Store incel power fantasy, and I don't know if it works better if the whole time Clarence has been Brazil'd, and this is just his mind, like, going through its death, like, spiral.
I don't know. I mean, it's like I don't know. I feel like it's an over the top kind of action piece. Like, I don't know. It's definitely heightened, right? Like, I feel like
it's a ton of fun, and everyone like the cast.
I love that movie.
Absolutely balls to the wall in that movie. Like, you get Samuel Jackson for maybe 3 minutes.
Also,
there may not have been a hotter woman than she was in that movie at 100%.
Like the second she walks on screen,
I will see you at that movie, but raise you Lost Highway, like because she was really good in Lost Highway too.
Yeah, she was killing it.
But like, I love
TJ's all time favorites. Like, oof,
the three way sort of standoff at the end of that movie is so tense and nuts.
Yeah.
And like the scenes, the scene with Drexel, with Gary Oldman, and the scene with between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken. Like, there's so many just.
Oh, you want to? Would you like to talk more about that scene?
they're talking about the genetic history of the island of Sicily. Like, that's all they're doing.
I know. Hopper, it's in the chat, but. Bronson Pinn shows you want me to suck his dick? Oh, who the fuck is dick?
Yeah. But like, yeah, Rappaport's great in it. Fucking Brad Pitt's just sewn on a couch the whole time. Like, I don't know. That movie rules. Yeah, fucking Floyd over here. He's smoking out of a honey bear and he's just like offering bong rips to James Gandolfini. Like, this is like, it's high art.
A deep bench on that movie too.
The bench is insane on that movie. And you know, it ends up with a happy ending, which is kind of nice. Tony Scott just like he just like ripped lines of coke and was like, "Let's just do this thing," and I'm here for it. There's other. I think we've talked about this before about maybe the unintentional. I don't know if it's an unintentional shared universe with Tarantino stuff. Or he just likes the way certain names and things sound, right? Like, we all know...
Alabama, I mean...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Alabama gets referenced in Reservoir Dogs. She's part of
the geography shared universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, she gets referenced... Like, Alabama gets referenced in Reservoir Dogs. Is that really the same Alabama? Who knows? But then, something else that got me, the movie producer guy, who they're trying Donowitz. To sell the... Yeah, is that Donnie Donowitz's grandson? Like,
I think you're right. I think he just liked the name and just kind of worked backwards.
Yeah, it is kind of fun to think it's connected. Also, speaking of Donnie Donowitz was the bear Jew, right?
That is correct.
So I was watching a clip on TikTok. So we all know that Adam Sandler was supposed to be that character, right? I think we've all been through that piece of trivia.
I've heard that. Yeah.
So Adam Sandler was talking about it, and the only reason this kind of killed me a little on the inside, because I want to go to the alternate universe where he got to be in that movie. The only reason he didn't do it was because he was shooting fucking funny people, and he couldn't make the schedules. And I was like,
I thought it was because he didn't want to be a Red Sox fan.
No.
2/3 of a good movie.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end.
First 3 hours are pretty good.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for Judd Apatow.
I'm a cave you skull in. We just hear back.
All the fake movies in Funny People. That part's very funny, but everything else.
Winning this hot dog contest won't bring mom back. It's all I got.
Yeah. Anything else, Gox?
Who these Nazis are gonna get it? No, that's it, TJ.
I watched one thing. It was really good. I watched Dev Patel's Monkey Man.
Ooh.
The trailer was fire for that thing.
I loved it. I thought it was great. It's got a little bit of pacing problems. I feel like it kind of shows you the same thing a little too often. But it's his first movie. I mean, I'll give him a little bit of slack. The action sequences are fantastic. I like the fact that it's a great revenge story, but it actually has like some heart. Like I felt like I feel like a lot of times with action movies specifically, like they're trying to get an emotional response out of the audience, and most of the time they fail. This one like really stuck it for me. I thought they did a really good job developing the relationship between Dev Patel's character and his mother. And it's a revenge story, and I really, really enjoyed the film. Also, like, obviously, the whole movie it takes place in India, and there's a lot of like Indian like religion and cultural things that are referenced. And I mean, as like a fucking naive Westerner, we don't really get to. I feel like that culture and that isn't really represented in Western films at all. So I thought that was cool.
Are you telling me that the 30 seconds of Indian culture in Scott Pilgrim does not count?
Well, that's my second favorite Indian character is Matthew Patel.
Patel's like Smith in India. Like it's a very common last name.
There's a Indian grocery store right down the street from me, and it's called Patel Brothers. So yeah, it's a very, very common Indian name, but yeah, I think all of you guys really like a Monkey Man. It's shot really well. The choreography is really good. Like the fight choreography is great. Dev Patel is wonderful in the movie. Like I didn't expect him to be able to like pull this off being like an action star, but he's really good in the fucking movie. But there are trans people in the movie. So I can't wait till, you know, the fucking moronic conservatives watch this movie. And like, I already saw comments are like, you didn't show the trans people in the trailer. You're trying not to scare people away from the movie. It's like, okay. Because basically this movie is about a trans army marching against Netanyahu and defeating him. That's kind of what this movie is about.
Talk me into it.
I mean, it literally is about it's also kind of about Modi, if you're familiar with that lunatic in India. He's also a fascist, much in the same way that
Indian's Netanyahu.
He is
what's her nuts Hawaii congressperson about Modi.
Oh yeah, fucking what's her name? I can't think of her name either. She's that irrelevant. She's kind of hot though. I'd still bang her.
I was surprised that Dev Patel's last full blown movie was Green Knight 3 years ago.
Well,
it takes a while to direct something.
That's a good point. I forgot he directed this.
So what's interesting is that I didn't know this when I saw the movie, but I watched the again TikTok clip or whatever. We lost Sean.
Lost him.
So Dev Patel had a deal with Netflix to produce this movie. So they shot the movie, Netflix produced it, gave him the funds and everything. And then Netflix, they finished the movie and Netflix didn't like the movie. So they were going to fucking shelve it.
Which is you have to buy the rights back from them or something?
Well, hold on. This is the cool part. And I get so I guess Dev Patel was frustrated and he showed the movie to Jordan Peele. And Jordan Peele's like, this movie's incredible. Like, what are you like? What the fuck were they thinking? And so Jordan Peele, I forget who put out the last three Jordan Peele movies. I think it's Universal. I could be wrong. But what it's a big studio. I think it's Universal. Anyway, Jordan Peterson used his sway.
Jordan Peterson?
Or Jordan Peele. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, he would hate this
Jordan movie. Peterson's monkey man.
No, Jordan Peele.
And Jordan Peterson's lobster man.
Yeah, clean your room.
He used his sway at Universal. I think it's Universal. And he got them to buy the movie for $10 million from Netflix. So the studio that actually put the movie out only invested $10 million in it. So it's probably already made its money back. And it got a theatrical release, which it wasn't going to get before. I highly recommend it. I thought it was a blast. I really
of all,
it.
Like...
And yeah, Netflix puts out so much junk. This is what they show.
The nerve of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's fucking the movie. All the shit they put out, like, and this is what they would refuse to put out.
Yeah, it's wild.
Netflix has any, like, cable or TV or anything fallen from grace so hard as Netflix has? Like, Jesus.
Yeah, remember their first doing okay, first like, couple movies? Like,
when they was like Netflix original, right?
Yeah. Like, remember the first movie, Beast of No Nation? That movie is fucking incredible. And then they're just...
Was nominated for Oscars.
Yeah, it was amazing. And now it's just like...
What was that black and white one they put out?
The Mexico.
Yeah, I care about the name of it. Yeah, it was called something. Iñárritu movie. Roma. Wasn't it called Roma?
Yes.
Remember when they got the rights to that that Cloverfield space movie, and the fucking reveal
yeah.
the Super Bowl, and that movie was just like
it was
a fucking dirt worst.
Wasn't it called like Cloverfield, like the Krylon paradox or something?
Stupid? Yeah, it had a second.
It was the Cloverfield paradox. It was called the
Cloverfield paradox.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but they also still put out good stuff too. Sometimes like. They're an enigma.
Yeah, they really are.
Because they put out they put out Rebel Moon, of which I got to see the trailer for the new one during WrestleMania.
Yeah, I watched that too. Also, I got to see an interview with Zack Snyder where he said that I guess by the end of summer there's going to be two hard R cuts of both films that's coming out.
It's like the Rebel Mooniverse.
Great.
Like two hard R cuts of the first one. And two hard R cuts of the second.
No. Two total. So a 4-hour cut of the first part and a 4-hour cut of the second one. The hard, like.
Well, I guess.
They're adding 2 hours of just hard R.
I guess, dude. I guess. Fuck. Zack Snyder literally, like, he thinks every movie, like, length makes every goddamn movie. It's like, okay, dude. Like.
Fucking Rebel Moon, goddamn it.
And he's like, when the interview, I forget who it was, maybe Rogan, I can't remember, but he's like, and it's hard R. I was like, okay, great, man. Fantastic. He's like, this is my vision. Like, yeah, I bet it is. So get ready to devote 8 hours of your day to fucking Rebel Moon 1 and 2.
I'm here for it. Like,
get ready to devote 8 hours of our podcast to the Rebel Moon.
Oh, God.
Extended
no.
cuts.
Jesus we should Christ. Only review the hard R part.
Yeah, we only have to watch the new stuff. We don't have to watch the old stuff again.
Oh, I also watched Dune Part 2 again. For like literally the third time. I can't stop watching that movie. I'm a big
Dune 2 Part 2.
Dune 2 Part 2. Down Tune. All right, let's get into Hell or High Water. Gogs, what happened in this movie? This crazy, crazy film.
You know what? The movie is about it's about hell.
Hold on! Before we get into this, real quick,
unbelievable. That's fast.
No, I forgot that we missed two people from the show last week. Oh damn it! Never mind. We lost Sean again. I wanted to ask him what they. Alec, did you get a chance to watch Thief last week, or did you not watch because you knew you weren't going to be on the show?
I did not, because I know I'm going to be on the show.
I was interested to hear what you thought about that. Go ahead. I'll ask Sean at the end of the show. I already know how he feels about Thief.
Okie dokie.
I was so, just curious.
Hell or High Water. Movie opens with actually, it opens kind of quiet as you're like a serene vision, like a town. You can tell it's like a dusty, you know, mid, like, well, you know, it's Texas, but it's like Western town where there's not a lot going on.
Yeah, it's like very, very small.
There's a lot of on the nose imaging in this movie. Like there's graffiti that said, I served 2 tours in Iraq and I no bailouts left for me. There's all the entire movie. It's very on the nose about like mortgage relief, debt relief. Are you in financial trouble? There's lots of billboards.
It didn't really bother me though. I felt like
it didn't bother me, but it's very heavy handed.
I mean, it's very similar. It's very similar to a movie that we brought up.
I think we watched it in general.
What's that, Sean? Sorry.
I said it's not a subtle movie in
No, there's nothing subtle about it. Right.
We brought up Killing Them Softly, which I feel like is very similar to this film in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So then the movie opens with a bank heist. They bust in right as this woman's opening up this Texas Midland Bank to start the day, and they find out she doesn't have keys to the vault and there's no money in the drawers. So now they got to wait for the bank manager to come in. Then so they sit around and they pop them in the nose and then they rob the bank. Then they're off in their IROC to go hit another bank. And they hit the same bank when there's this old cowpoke with a shoebox full of nickels. And they rob that place. And it's interesting because you can immediately see, and I think you get this, this is kind of like, I mean this in the nicest way possible. A lot of, and I don't know what came first, but this is sort of like the West Texas version of the town, because you got the one crazy hothead lunatic bank robber and the other bank robber who's less of a lunatic. And he's kind of more like the moral compass of this thing. So you got Chris Pine and Ben Foster, who I will just put it on Front Street. Ben Foster does not get enough credit or enough work. The guy, I've never seen him bad in anything.
I would argue that this might be his best role, though. He's so
What's the space one whose name escapes me? It's like not Delirium, but it's something like that.
Pandorum. Pandorum. No,
he's really good in that. Pandorum
rock. Yeah, that movie rocks.
Jake Wazurski says hello or whatever. So they rob a bank, and they've got their.
Fucking Alpha Dog reference.
Shout out to Alpha Dog.
Oh, I like that movie too. That's a
good rules, and he's great in it. They're robbing banks, and then this cowpoke like fires guns at him, but like Ben Foster couldn't be happy about it. Chris Pine's very disturbed, and then the movie sort of the movie's actually relatively A to B. You find out that Ben Foster went to jail for 10 years from doing all sorts of dirty shit. And meanwhile, Chris Pine has been like literally holding down the farm. Their mother passed away. The mother had been screwed over by a bank to talking to her a reverse mortgage. And you find out that they got, not only are they going to foreclose on her property at the end of the week, but like Chevron has found oil on it. So now, we need to write this. So the big plan, Chris Pine's big plan, is he's going to steal only from Texas Midland Bank, the bank that's going to foreclose on his mother's property. He's going to steal only enough money to settle her debts, and then the house and everything gets left to his boys in a trust, so they're set up for life because now they got an oil field. So his estranged wife and his 2 sons are taken care of, and they have the life that he's never had. And so the whole movie is like a
corporation. And all these banks are out in the middle of nowhere, and they're tiny little banks with no security. The plot's actually kind of brilliant, like for a very uncomplicated
movie. Oh, the plot's amazing. Yeah, no, and then they go to like, so on their hot on their tail now is Rooster Cogburn and his partner, who are Texas Rangers, and it's interesting, and it's a very smart movie in how they portray Ben Foster and Chris Pine's characters, because they're like, they don't take enough money to make anyone care enough. Like the FBI doesn't care enough because we're talking about $7,000 here. They're not taking dye packs. They're only taking loose bills.
Well, there's something that they say right away. I think Jeff Bridges says it. He's like, they're only taking the bank's money.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I thought was an interesting thing. Like, they're only taking the...
They do a really good job subverting, because normally, in a movie like this, Ben Foster would steal the entire vault or something. You know what I mean?
There right. Would be like, it'd be like Point Break, right? Like, he would diverge from the rules at some point, and that's where everything would go sideways.
And he sort of does at one point in the movie, but it doesn't go the way you'd expect it to go.
Right.
No,
at the diner, I feel like he kind of goes, he definitely breaks protocol and just does something very irrational and stupid. Yeah. But honestly,
shout out to Big Titty Katie Mixon.
Good
for her. You guys may or may not have noticed this, but do you know who the one of the tellers was that they interview, the cops interview?
Hmm.
That's what's her name? Mid Thunder, the lead actress from Prey.
Oh, no kidding. Shit.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's her. I was like, that's fucking awesome. I mean, she must have been super young, but I was like, I recognize her. I was like, oh, that's what's her name from Prey. That's awesome.
So they're being like,
shout out to Prey, by the way.
Shout out to Prey. So they're being sort of hunted by Jeff Bridges and his partner, and those two have an interesting relationship where Jeff Bridges just shitty.
He's just racist.
It's the worst.
like super racist.
There's a really sort of like touching scene because Jeff Bridges has lost his wife. He's getting ready to retire. You can tell his idea of reality is coming to an end. Right. Sort of a No Country for Old Men thing.
The Last Samurai. Yeah. No Country for Old Men. Like, it's what we love.
Well, there's a scene in this movie where they're hunkering down in a hotel for the night because they figure they're only hitting Texas Midland Bank, so there's only eight of them, so they're going to hit this one eventually. So they wait at a steakhouse. The steakhouse scene is hilarious.
Oh my god, this waitress!
Like, I don't know. She has like Freddy Krueger dream arms. Like, her arms don't make sense. But there's a scene in this hotel room where Jeff Bridges is hanging out in his partner's room and they're watching TV. And he just keeps giving his partner shit. And you can tell his partner wants nothing else to do with it. He rolls over and he's not paying attention. And he's like, aren't you getting tired? He's like, yep, I guess I am. And he reluctantly stands up and then puts his open Shiner back into the six-pack of beers he bought. Like you can tell he wanted, like, he wants to connect and be with this guy.
Right.
And but he can't figure out how to do it. And then what happens later makes that all the more tragic, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, but then, like, the idea, like, the bank heist, the plot is, so they rob the banks, they bury their car on their farmland, like, they already dug a grave for it, they bury the IROC, and then they go to clean this first round of money, and they go across the border to Oklahoma to a casino, and it's insane. Like, you take loose bills, right, they're unmarked bills, no one, there's nothing, the casinos love money, you hand them the money, you get a whole bunch of chips, you hang out for a little bit, then you hand it back to them, and they're giving you clean money. And in this case, they give him a check that he wrote out to Texas Midland Bank. So he can't even, like, it's not like he can even be tempted to do anything else with it. It's not his money anymore. So, like, and then you get an awesome
Not to mention, apparently, Ben Foster's character is tremendous at poker.
Oh, he comes
to the table with a couple of chips, and he comes back with a tray full of chips.
Three racks.
Bro, that fucking scene, I think I was getting ready to mention it. The fucking Comanche scene has lived rent-free.
Yeah.
Comanche means enemies forever.
You know what that makes me?
Makes me a fucking Comanche.
Yeah, that shit rocks.
And the stare down, Ben Foster has crazy eyes. Like,
he's not, like, physically intimidating in any way. Like, normally, he's just so fucked up.
And there's a scene later at a gas station where he's just sitting in the driver's seat of the car.
Oh, my God.
And these punks show up in a Charger, and they're trying to give him shit. And he's like, he says a line, and he's like, son, you'd think there were 10 of me. The dude stands up, and then all of a sudden Chris Pine comes out of left field and just beats
the shit out of him.
Out of this guy.
Their chemistry. I don't know if anybody's mentioned already, but Chris Pine is excellent in this movie.
He's really
phenomenal. He is playing against type. He's playing, like, super low key. he's playing like super reserved and kind of sullen. Like he's charming, but he's charming in that way that he's sort of like, he's charming because he can't help it.
Like well, he's kind of like, sad. Like he's got like that sad boy energy to this whole
the
movie.
The end of this movie, and I know we'll get to it, but the bit of dialogue between him and Jeff Bridges at the end is up there with the end of
so good
for me as like some of the best, like, just ending dialogue in any film ever.
So fucking good.
Well, and I like, I mean, I guess I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I like the reincorporation where early, like very early in the movie, I think it's at the diner scene, Chris Pine goes to Ben Foster and is like, well, do you think we'll get away with it? And Ben Foster goes, I never heard of nobody that gets away with anything. And that's literally the same, basically the same message that Jeff Bridges has. And I love that little bit of reincorporation. I thought that was brilliant. Like,
also, Chris Pine doesn't think he's going to get away with it. He sets this whole thing up so if he doesn't get away with it, it won't matter. He's found legal loopholes to do so. So he's not worried about getting away with it. He's worried about taking care of his family. That's all he cares about. So they do this first round, and now it's time for round two. Well, things get a little off the rails because they got to steal an extra car, and they got to do this, that, and the other. And then the Rangers are hunkered down on one bank, and then they're driving to that bank, actually, and they realize that bank's too small. We need to go to the first bank. They're going to do two banks a day, and that branch is closed down now. So now we got to make up for the fact that we're only getting one bank. So we can't go to this town anymore because it's too small. The bank's not big enough.
This is a small thing, but the little tiny bank is in a town called Post, which is like, I think, a deliberate allusion to like, a you know, the one horse, the post town or whatever the fuck.
Oh, should I even pick up on that? Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, no, that's where they go to Post is the bigger town.
Right. But it's so still then, like
a, right.
Yeah.
So they go to this bigger town, bigger bank, and they walk in, and their whole MO thus far is get there right when the bank opens, so there's nobody there. They do what they have to do and they leave. They show up here middle of the day on payday. The place is full of people and things just, I mean, the tension just skyrockets.
Oh yeah.
Because they're like, screw this, just the two of them. It's a bank full of people. It's Texas. So people got guns. They're keeping everybody held down. They're getting stuff out of the drawers. The security guard opens fire on Ben Foster. Ben Foster annihilates him. And then Chris Pine catches a round from a civilian who just pulls out a gun. You can see Chris Pine's just like spraying. Like, he doesn't know what the hell he's not in this for this, right? He never thought he was going to fire his gun.
Well, and yeah, they went out of their way not to be violent towards, like, you know what I mean? Like they,
right.
There's that scene.
But again, that reincorporation at the end where it's like, you know, he's like, oh, I never killed anybody. He's like, yes, you did. Yes, you did. Like the whole thing, again, nobody gets away.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's brilliant.
And then the bank of the heist goes bad, but like Ben Foster like literally leaps across tables and just blows this dude's brains out. They run out to their car and the town is now opening fire on them. So they're trying to get away. They start getting chased down the road. They got a whole caravan of like F-150s and Broncos and whatever chasing after them. And then they're having a little conversation about how shitty this all went. And Ben Foster realized that Chris Pine's been shot and his demeanor like changes. And he's like, all right, so through and through, you're going to be okay. Get some pressure on it, tape it up. And he's like, all right. And he just pulls the car over, pulls out his AR and just starts lighting into these dudes and scatters all.
This movie's so fucking good.
And the part where he loads the guns into his truck, and they're like, what's that? He's like, that's my livelihood. Because he's, like, out hunting coyotes or whatever, is spare. Like,
I like too, how earlier in the movie he's loading up the clips or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's like, duct taping them, and then you see him. He's, like, flipping them.
Opposite flips.
It's cool. That's some of that competency porn that we like so much. Like, that shit was cool.
So he breaks these vigilantes off of them. Then he gets to their drop-off car, and he's like, all right, let's get in. And Ben Foster's like, nope, you go. I'm gonna go do this now. So Chris Pine reluctantly drives away with the money and away from the scene.
Hang on, before you say that, there's a really touching moment here where he's like, he's like, I love you, man. And he's like taken way off guard by it. He's like, I love you too. But then because they're dudes, he's like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Right. Their chemistry in this movie, I think I was trying to say this before, Ben Foster and Chris Pine's chemistry in this movie is outstanding. Oh,
it's fantastic. I mean, they really do feel like brothers in this movie.
They really do. Yeah. And you can tell, like, Ben Foster was like the big brother who had it hard, and, you know, Chris Pine was the little brother who had it easier. And just that's that weight has been carried on their whole life, but that's just the way it is.
Oh, so then Ben Foster, real quick before I forget, I'm sorry, because we're talking about like the end of an era. The whole movie's kind of the end of an era, like, even though it takes place in relatively present day, they're all old cars and old technology. And then there's that scene where it's like, well, my people have been making a living here for 150 years. And he's like, yeah, well, maybe that's over.
Yeah.
Like, it's all right there.
So then Ben Foster literally heads into the hills, lights the truck on fire, sends it backwards like a bomb, and then just starts pot-shotting dudes with a hunting rifle. Meanwhile, Chris Pine manages to skate through a police checkpoint
with the tape.
And with tape taped up and the money, gets away with it. He gets to the, you know, he doesn't, I don't know if he goes to the Indian casino that night or whenever, but he gets there.
Did you bring up his attorney? That's like, that knows what they're up to, and he's like, well, fuck the bank.
Yeah, he's like, the attorney is incredibly base.
He's like, you really want to fuck them? Have them manage the trust.
Yeah, the scene where the attorney's like, you could see like the scene where the attorney's like kind of like chokes back, like why he's doing it. He's like,
yeah,
they kept your mom poor intentionally, and it was you could just tell it was like disgusting to him. He's like, you know, like, this is right. This right is right. You're paying them back with their own money. Fuck them.
Well, it's not that often you get an anti-capitalist Western, right? So that, I think, is touching us all in a specific place.
Oh, yeah. And it's the thing. Every bystander, everybody's like anti-cap. Like, they're talking about how the banks have ruined everything. They're talking about, like, Katie Mixon's character. She gets tipped $200 by Chris Pine. And then when Rooster Cogburn tries to collect it as evidence, she's like, that's my tip. He hasn't been convicted of a crime yet, and that's half my mortgage. So,
even that gets brought back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And, you know, when they're like doing the denouement and like the parlor scene, it's like, well, yeah, she doesn't recognize the guy, but she sure is pissed about that $200 still.
Yeah. Like, she doesn't roll over on it. But anyway, so there's a standoff in the hills, and Jeff Bridges' partner gets brained by Ben Foster. And then Jeff Bridges.
Well, it's so great too, because it takes him a second to realize what happened. Because he's like in mid sentence, and then he kind of realizes he didn't answer, and it's like, oh my god,
he's in mid insult, and it's like all this.
I mean, he hit him like right through the scope. It's like
when they pull my hat off, but there's brains fucking hidden, like sitting in his hat, and then Jeff Bridges loses his mind. In some of the best acting we've seen Jeff Bridges do in a long time.
It's his last performance, too. R.I.P. Jeff Bridges.
So then he ends up talking to one of the local good old boys, like, can you get me up? The guy's in the bridge. Take me around, whatever. He's like, you know the land. Okay, cool. And he ends up killing Ben Foster. Ben Foster's like, you can tell he's like much like the end of the town, like he's going out the way he wants to go out. Like he is.
I don't think Ben Foster has any illusions that he's going to get out of this.
No. But he's like, the scene where he just kind of like reflects on it, he's like, Lords of the Plains.
Lord of the Plains. That's me.
And then, God,
this movie's so fucking good, dude. Like, I can't help it.
He gets fucking zapped. He's just laying there on his fucking rifle.
Oh, and it's because it's Texas, a citizen offers to shoot him.
So Chris Pine cleans the money, goes back to the bank on time, pays all the debts, and
they're still trying to fuck him.
He is so icy cold in this. He's like, I want to see you fax it right now. It's like, we'll fax it by the end of the week. It is the end of the week. I want to see you do it. And he fucking
It's gonna take a while. I got all day.
Yeah, and then he goes, and as he's leaving, then he says, you guys manage trusts? And then the coda. Right,
Rooster the greatest Cogburn scene was, in modern movie history.
So Rooster Cogburn's. He only had 3 weeks left in his deal. It's very similar to the end of, I think, Logan Lucky. Shout Logan Lucky, where they're like, listen, they're like, he goes and talks to the Rangers, and they're like, listen, the brother that died, this makes sense. The other brother's clean. He's never been in trouble. No one can place him at any of the scenes.
And it's not worth the effort.
It's not worth the effort. Yeah. He's not doing anything. Like, he's not, like, they got, you know, like, he's sitting on oil money now. Are we going to arrest him? He's making $50K a month. Are we going to arrest him?
She actually says
$40,000
stealing $40,000 from the bank that manages his own.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So, no. So then he goes as a civilian to go visit Chris Pine, Jeff Bridges does. And like Sean said earlier, their conversation, that entire scene, it's probably 5 minutes long, maybe. And the way it ends is just like, I don't want to rob people of it, but it's so, well, I wouldn't do it justice anyway.
I love too how Jeff Bridges' character, he's still the detective the whole time, right? Like he's still trying to figure out the whole, like the whole picture. And then he realizes Go ahead.
I was going to say, the fact that he realizes that it's not his house, that he didn't know that.
I was just about to say that, yeah.
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 And then, that it's like, oh, he's doing this all for his kids and his ex-wife. Like, that shit's wild. And then, like, he kind of relents a little bit. He doesn't fully, obviously. But, like, he definitely backs off a little bit. And then that's when you get... Yeah.
Right. The way it ends, where he's like, I'm renting a little house out of town if you want to get into this conversation. All right, that sounds great.
Maybe you'll live with the rest of your life. So will I. And he goes, maybe I'll come visit you. And he's like, hope you do soon.
I'll bring you some peace. Yeah. Or maybe you.
It's so, that line is so fucking good, dude. Like,
yeah, it's
and the fact
quite
that they don't even turn around and make the ex-wife like nice to him. You know what I mean? Still doesn't like him.
No, but that's not what it's about. It's about him taking care of his kids.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's one of those things where it's just like, it's really brilliantly written, and then it's really capped off by like two really strong performances, like in this scene, like the whole movie. I think that's like, that kind of carries the movie for me. It's just, it's very well written and very well acted.
You know, well, like Chris Pine, by the end of the movie, go ahead, Sean.
To go back to something TJ said about Monkey Man, it's like you don't get like these like spectacle action movies. I know this isn't like a super big like heat or anything, but it's especially an action heist movie, but it's got a lot of emotion to it. It has something to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like Chris Pine's character has resigned himself to like, it's, he's got nothing left in like the best way possible. He did exactly what he needed to do at this point. Kill me or not doesn't really make a difference because I've won. Like, you can't unwin me at this point. Like, my kids are set up. I can go meet my maker or whatever else, knowing that I did everything I could do for them. And there it is. This movie fucking rules.
Yeah, I agree. Alec, was your favorite part of this movie the Shiner Bock product placement?
No, although I do love Shiner Bock.
It's so good. I forgot all about that. I used to drink that beer all the time. I was like, hell yeah, Shiner.
My favorite part is the audacity of Jeff Bridges to decide to be in a movie in like 2005 and use the same accent in every movie for the rest of his life. No matter what kind of movie it is. Like,
wasn't it
like,
True Grit was before this, though,
yeah,
right?
True Grit broke him. Yeah.
Yeah.
True Grit was way before this.
Yeah.
But he uses it regardless of genre or anything.
Fucking witches movie.
Yeah, fucking witches. Fucking witches.
The Last Witch Hunter. Fucking witches. Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
I don't know, dude. He's good in this movie, though. Like, it works. I feel like
he is, and it does kind of work, but it doesn't excuse the fact that he's used it for every movie for 20 years.
It's a fair point.
How great would it have been if he'd been Rooster Cogburn in Iron Man, though?
Oh, shit. Well, he didn't talk like that in Iron Man.
No, he did not. He sounded like a normal human being.
Yeah.
Tony Stark built this in a cave.
Man, that first Iron Man movie, really good.
Tony Stark built this in a cave. What's this crap? Fucking Iron Man.
Iron Man's.
Anything else we want to talk about before we get into Five Knuckle Shuffles? I feel like we interjected a lot.
It's just Taylor Sheridan wrote this and Sicario, like, back-to-back, like, banger.
Yeah, we were talking about that before you got on. I guess he writes a lot of that Yellowstone stuff, too. Now I'm like, well, maybe I should watch some of that.
Can't be bothered. Make a movie or shut up.
Yeah, but those are two really good movies.
Yeah, Tulsa King's really good. Stallone's
great. That's right. Yeah, that's right. For I need to watch that. Real quick, before you know, Sean, did you watch Thief last week? I know you'd seen it before.
No, but I've seen Thief a million times. It's a 10. I fucking love that movie.
Okay, that's what I thought. Sean, yeah. How did you feel about Hell or High Water?
I can't rate this movie objectively because when I saw it, it blew my fucking balls off. I watched it right at the end of, because it came out right at the end of the year. So it was on my list. Like, it was like number two or three. I think this is objectively a masterpiece. This is a 10, like coast to coast, butter and toast. Like, I don't think you can make a better version of this movie. And it's everything we didn't like about the Robert Redford movie is corrected in this movie.
That is correct. That is correct.
I'm going to give it to, I want to give it to Alec because he's the only one where I don't know exactly what his score will be.
Also, this is a Western, and we know how Alec feels about Westerns. It's a modern Western, but it is a Western.
Yeah, I'd say it's a Western, but it's, I don't know, a Neo-Western? I guess what's the opposite of, Neo means like older.
No, Neo is new. Neo-Western.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a Neo-Western. It's like a new age Western. I'm going to give it a 7. I did really enjoy it. I thought it was really good, and the performances were all good. Jeff Bridges aside, like, his performance is good, but I can't get past that voice. And it's Chris Pine is so pretty. It's hard for me to get him in like a gritty, grimy, dirty.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because I felt like, that I way too a little bit.
I can't see him as anything except for Captain Kirk.
It's like, you know what it is? So, it's because he's
so fucking good as Kirk. Like,
the mustache does not suit him. Like, no. It looks weird.
It probably would have been better with just like a full like 3-day unshaven look instead of just the mustache.
I think you need somebody.
That's not Texas.
You need somebody a little bit more like grizzled looking, like a Bernthal or Frank Grillo type, I feel like. Because you're right, Chris Pine is really good in this movie, but I will say he's a little too pretty for this movie. I don't disagree with that at all. I'm glad you brought that up.
But I guess maybe that's part of what they were going for is the anti Ben Foster.
Yeah, well, it's kind of
you got the angry, dirty, filthy, grizzled guy, and then his pretty younger brother.
Yeah,
but it's hard for me.
You still buy that they're brothers somehow?
Yeah,
like their chemistry, they have great chemistry together.
I totally
even like that. Even like in the diner after the diner scene where like a lot of movies would have been easy for Chris Pine to like not disown him but be like, well, we're done. Like you clearly are a loose cannon. He's just like, what the fuck is you doing? Now we gotta get a new car, now we gotta do this.
Right.
He doesn't like cast him off or like blow him up. He's just like, well, that was dumb. Let's regroup. Let's figure out the next step. But yeah, overall, I liked it. This is something I'll rewatch at some point and check it out again. Nice. But yeah, I'll give it a 7 for, and the Jeff Bridges thing is no fault of the movie. It's just unfortunately that
it's a fault of Jeff Bridges.
Of all the accents he's done in his career, the Rooster Cogburn is the one he decided to adopt.
That's
for sticks. Like the end of his career. Gogs.
It's a 10 for me. I can't not love this. I can't objectively, like, there's parts of this movie, like the, all the themes about all the anti-cap themes, while agreed, it is heavy handed. And I can like maybe fault it a little bit for being a little heavy handed in that regard, but I'm not gonna, cause I love it. I'm giving it a majority of these points because it's good, but Ben Foster is so fucking good in this movie. And he is like, I feel like so criminally underappreciated. And like every time I was just looking at his IMDb, like whenever he plays a maniac, I mean, awesome. I forgot that he was in 310 to Yuma and he's like the best part of that movie. Like,
that movie's not as good as I wished it was.
No, but like, he's like one of the best parts of Alpha Dog. He's like, he's just, he is. great as he is crazy part of
X-Men 3.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He was Archangel, yeah. Was he not?
Just
regular Angel, excuse me.
He didn't have that metal wing.
But no, I love
best it. Part of 30 Days of Night, another terrible comic book movie.
Oh, God, yeah. Apparently he was in Hostiles, and I still need to see Hostiles.
That's a good movie.
I don't remember him in Hostiles.
I don't remember him in
either. That's a good movie.
But no,
that was
that
was the first movie I ever used MoviePass for.
Hell yeah. Shout out. And now you're the CEO of MoviePass.
Well, I was.
But no, this movie's it's great. It's tense. It's super smart. It's well written, and it's got enough heart to make you legitimately care about everyone. Chris Pine's great in it.
It doesn't insist upon itself because I know you hate that.
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't stick around too long. Hey, buddy.
Yeah, TJ. I agree completely. It's a 10 for me, dog. I think this movie's freaking great. I do love Westerns, and I love, you don't get a whole, I can't really think of a ton of examples of like the neo-Western genre, but this absolutely is one, you know what I mean? And it's just, again, everything about it is good. I think Sean said it best where it's just like, this is the best version of this movie. I don't see where you can improve this movie. I think like everything is just so well done. And I also, I definitely agree with Goggs where he says that this movie is not subtle and it's a little heavy-handed. However, like maybe it's just because I agree with the politics of the movie so much that like I don't mind it being that way. You know what I mean? Like I don't think everything necessarily has to be, you know what I mean? You don't have to be kind of like subtle or tongue-in-cheek.
Subtle,
And I feel like a lot of Westerns in general aren't real subtle with their themes. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, take something like Unforgiven, you know what I mean?
Sukiyaki,
like,
very Western Django.
Sukiyaki Western Django, another prime example. But I really like this movie. I like that it has something to say. I'm not surprised this is the same guy that wrote Sicario, because I could feel like these are kind of like sister movies in a weird way. Like, I feel like they definitely, you can see the writing style like carry through, and I like them both for a lot of the same reasons. And I need to watch more of this director's work, because I've literally, this is the only film of his that I've seen, and I like this so much. I should probably go back and check other stuff.
Has anyone watched a movie called Wind River?
No.
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
So it's got Jeremy Renner in it, but it's been... they're calling it, like, I was just Googling, because I was looking up neo-Western. Like, what is a neo-Western? Yada, yada. And they were saying they named Sicario, Hell or High Water, and then this movie, Wind River, they're calling it Taylor Sheridan's, what do they call it, Modern Western Trilogy. The Modern American Frontier Trilogy. Modern American Frontier
Trilogy. Yeah, that's a little cumbersome. I will say that Sicario is definitely like a Western too, I guess. But it's not as straight a Western as this is. This is like a fucking
anti-imperialist movie.
Yeah, this is about two fucking outlaws like against the system. This is as Western as it gets. You know what I mean? Like,
agreed.
They're
making thing out of the furnace is a modern Western. They're also saying that
I wouldn't really.
I agree.
Out of the furnace a modern Western. Is it really? I guess
it's
I need
like
to
kind of like
it.
An outlaw Josie Wales kind of thing. Not like a True Grit, but more of
It's not set in the West. It's in like Appalachia, isn't it?
Yes.
That's west of Baltimore.
Barely.
They're also saying Wave of the Gun is a modern Western.
Oh, what a Kobe was.
It ends up.
This is my website. This is my GeoCities account.
All right. Well, that is Hell or High Water. What a great movie. Whose pick is it next week?
John or Alex?
Alex.
I'm going to pick a movie Goggs talked about. I listened to the episode from last week.
Nice. What'd you think? It was just me and Goggs. We were out there swimming all by ourselves.
It was good. Although I didn't like the movie that I'm going to reference.
I didn't like Goggs.
I didn't like the movie I'm going to reference either. But at some point, Goggs said, well, we like simple stories told well, but none of us liked The Old Man and the Gun, which was a simple story told well. We didn't like it.
True.
So that doesn't always, I forget what movie Gods was talking about, but that doesn't always hold true.
Might have been The Passenger that I was talking about. That was very good. I like that a lot.
Maybe. Yeah, I think it was. You were talking about it. God chimed in. We are going to watch
The Lady Killers. Hours.
Spaceballs.
That is
I mean, Hellraiser 3.
They steal Planet Vespa.
Well, you guys talked.
A little bit last
week. Well, shit, I could pick Rogue One. That's kind of a heist.
Didn't we watch Rogue One?
I'm going to pick Miami Vice because I'm pretty sure there's a heist of some sort.
I want to see that now. Let's go. I'm excited. I've never seen it. I'm excited to watch it.
Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx as Crockett and Tubbs.
Has anybody?
Everybody keeps telling me I'll love that movie, but I watched it once and I didn't care for it. But maybe I was just not in the headspace for it. What?
You know what? Hang on a second. I might change my pick almost immediately. Hang on.
You burnt Michael Mann. I'll get two movies this month.
I'm gonna watch it anyway. Michael Manuary.
Hold please.
Hold please.
Stand by.
Never mind. We're watching the A Team.
Oh yeah!
Yep, we're watching the 80 because I think God is gonna love this movie.
I'm excited to be wrong. All right. I want to be wrong about the 18. I'm still.
Yeah, I hope it turns out better than A-team, Blade
not Miami Vice. I still might watch Miami Vice on my own because I kind of want to watch it now.
I kind of do too. Right, just to see Michael Mann's Miami Vice.
I'll put both of them on. All right, everybody. That's the show. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye, boys.